It probably comes as no surprise we're about to have a conversation with our Perth Tonight GP, Dr. Joe Kostrich. And the subject is the health star rating. You ever seen that star rating that's given to food? You know, like if you've got 5 stars, this must be super healthy. If you've only got 1 star, my God, go and see your doctor. You're about to have a heart attack. Well, speaking of hearts, they say, like the heart tick that preceded it, the health star rating, otherwise known as the HSR system, was introduced without proof of benefit. In other words, it seemed like a good idea at the time, has been described by some doctors as, and I quote here, an abject failure. And Dr. Joe Kostrich joins us right now. Hi, Joe.
Good evening, Chris.
So this health star rating, which many would interpret, if something has a 5-star rating, it must be super healthy. You're saying, well, firstly, there's no proof that that is the case. And so therefore, by extension, it's misleading people.
Very much so. And I think one just has to look at what's happened to our collective waistlines as a society since the early 1980s, when low-fat dietary guidelines were introduced. And if one looks at the star system, and it's sort of the successor to the tick system that became quite discredited, particularly when it was shown how much money was paid to get a tick. The basic flaw is that it rewards certain types of foods over others, and that's where the whole algorithm is flawed. So if it has a lot of processed grains, it gets quite a high score. If it has some fat in it, then it gets a very low score. And there are some really egregious examples, and I'll give you three. One is that regular milk gets 4 stars. Up and Go, which is a flavoured drink which has milk in it, but I won't read you out all the ingredients, but it includes a number of additives, preservatives, corn syrup, vegetable oils, cane sugar, the list goes on, gets 4.5 stars. If you then compare the Up and Go, and this is a demographic, an infographic from that sugar film which came out a couple of years ago, and you look at the number of teaspoons of sugar in a 350ml serving of this Up and Go that gets 4.5 stars, it's 4.7 teaspoons of sugar. Iced chocolate, 375ml serve, has 4.4 teaspoons of sugar. So I think we're basically seeing that something which is getting a high health star rating not only is far less, far more perhaps manufactured processes, a whole host of ingredients, but something that just comes from nature, which is milk, and yes, it has gone through a pasteurising process, but you know, milk is essentially milk, gets a lower rating, and something that's 4.5 stars has the same amount of sugar to within 0.3 of a teaspoon as iced chocolate. Now, I don't think most people would regard iced chocolate as something that sort of, I mean, it's a trait if you want to go down that path, but I don't think people would regard it as particularly healthy.
Well, let's put it this way. I don't think most would view it as a staple.
No. And then sardines in spring water gets 3.5 stars. Now, we know that a lot of people don't get enough omega-3s, and we know that fish is a good source of protein as well. So essentially, the whole system is tarnished, and it's tarnished because it's dominated by giving good, you know, high ratings to grain-based food and penalising other foods.
Now, why is this the case? Because we seem to have a circumstance here where, if I'm hearing you correctly, we're seeing higher star ratings in some cases for foods that have way too much sugar by anyone's measure. At the same time, we're seeing preference for grain-based foods, which, let's be honest, a lot of people can't tolerate. And at the, so therefore, are we seeing what we might consider inbuilt biases that don't have any scientific basis to them?
That's completely correct. And some researchers in the UK put out a paper 4 years ago essentially saying that when the current guidelines, and this it reflects in the food pyramid both here and in the United States and in the UK and other countries, when that was introduced, there was no scientific basis to introduce it. It was introduced, seemed like a good idea at the time. One also has to be aware that there are a whole host of political and ideological drivers behind this. And in particular, the influence of, if one really wants to go in the rabbit hole with this, Chris, and it's not a conspiracy because it's all hiding in plain sight, the influence in particular of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in developing, and its offshoots in developing these guidelines, essentially seeks to penalise animal-based products over grain-based products. If you're a vegetarian and that's your religion, which you're absolutely entitled to have and hold, then that's fine. But it's a religion, it's not a science. And various writers have really delved into the history of all of this. We also know that some of these groups have been involved in putting the guidelines together. But people then say, well, hang on, how am I going to know what to eat? Nobody had to tell our ancestors what to eat. You know, up until the early 80s, the late 1970s, people ate real food. And Jamie Oliver, I think, defines it quite well when he says, real food doesn't have ingredients. Real food is ingredients. So we're talking about meat, fish, chicken, eggs, dairy, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, berries. You don't need labels or stars or ticks or elephant stamps on these foods, because these are the sorts of foods that human beings have always eaten, and we know that human beings do quite well on those sorts of foods. The problems we see today has come about because people have tried to turn that whole concept that served humanity since the dawn of time upside down.
And so what we're seeing is ideology at work in a food sense. And the problem is amplified by the fact that we're not seeing any science in the debate. And if we are seeing some sort of pseudoscience in the debate, it's being distorted by somebody's preference being pushed through this particular channel.
Yeah, very much. And it suits a multitude of purposes. And when one looks at who's behind these guidelines, yes, there are various medical groups, but there are also industry groups. Now, industry, look, it wants to sell its products, and they have a legitimate commercial interest in wanting to sell their products, and I have no issue with that. However, what's sometimes called the health washing of certain foods is where it is a problem. So when you get health groups that are prepared to sort of sidle up to, food manufacturers and essentially say, look, we'll give your food all these ticks and stars, why don't we just say to people, and people say, well, the population is going to be confused. No, the population will get it. If you say to them, eat real food, and basically real food is the best food to eat. If you want to eat some processed food, that is okay. I'm not saying you can't eat something that comes out of a box or a package, but if most of what you eat has come pretty much from nature, or it's been growing somewhere or moving around, and if you don't eat it in the next week, it's probably going to go off, people will get that. People will actually get that. Whenever you've got a food that has so many ingredients on it that it almost fills up half the label, and they have to put all these numbers on because it's just too long to put all the terminology. Yeah. Another simple way to think about these things, Michael Pollan, who's an American food writer, says, if you buy a food and within it are a whole lot of things that you would not ordinarily find in your own pantry, then, you know, how much of that do you really want to eat? If you make biscuits at home, you're probably going to put in some sugar. Yes, it's not the end of the world. You know, some form of flour, eggs. You're going to have a handful ingredient to make your biscuits. If you look at some of the biscuits that you buy off the shelf, they've got a whole lot of other things aside from those basic ingredients that you would have in your own pantry.
Yep, it's a whole bunch of chemicals that are designed to make it look and taste like the real thing, but it can actually not be the real thing. Look, Joe, and we're having a chat to our Perth Tonight GP, Dr. Joe Kostrich, by the way. He mentions that, like the heart tick that came before it, what we know is the Health Star rating, or HSR, where you get different health stars on various different foods. It's all part of the food labelling process. They're arguing that that should be removed because it's, well, basically got no scientific foundation to it, and so by extension becomes misleading. So you look at something and, oh, wow, that must be healthy. Well, to borrow the line from the song, it ain't necessarily so. Joe, I wanted to get down to asking you, on the basis of this, and let's say, for example, somebody went through and they said, okay, only 4 or 5 star ticks for me. Unless they happen to have 4 or 5 star ticks, I'm not buying it. How much stuff would you argue that people bought that, as a doctor, you would be quite concerned about?
Look, that would be an enormous concern because, first of all, it's saying that they're buying a whole lot of foods that are processed and, as you said, have a whole lot of additives, chemicals, preservatives. I really want to emphasise these things are safe. Safe defined, of course, it's not going to kill you, but they have the human body has no use for them. So if you're eating a lot of these sorts of foods, then you're eating a lot of processed and manufactured foods. So almost by definition, you're not eating a lot of real food. And number two, you probably have been hoodwinked in as much as you think you're eating really healthy food. And as you get heavier and heavier, you're going to ask yourself why. And the reason why is because these foods are going to have a significant amount of refined carbohydrates. And when that hits your bloodstream, The body will produce insulin, and that insulin will convert it into fat for storage. And if you do that enough times through the day, your body goes into permanent fat storage mode, which makes it very difficult for you to then lose weight. And eventually you end up with insulin resistance. It takes, you know, 15, 20, maybe more years. So really, a lot of people even today are wondering why on a low-fat diet they struggle to lose weight. And the reason for that is that the body is in fat storage mode when you're giving it a constant diet of refined and processed carbohydrates.
Sheesh. So what you're telling me in short is a lot of dietary information and a lot of information that people are looking at and going, wow, this must be good, is quite the reverse, and people could potentially be doing stuff that's doing them great harm in the belief that they're doing the exact opposite.
Just have to look at photos of an average Australian city or at the beach or wherever, you know, circa 1979 and today. And you'll notice an immediate difference in how the people look. And the biggest change between then and now has been the introduction and the following of the food pyramid and dietary guidelines. And you hear all these dietitians say, oh, no, people don't follow the guidelines. Yet they have. You just got to look at food sales to see there's been decrease in red meat sales, decrease in full-fat product sales, and a significant increase in sales of grain-based foods. So it's not that people haven't followed the guidelines, they have. And the results are plain as day when you look around in the real world. The problem with some of these people, they don't get a lot into the real world. They sit in their sort of ivory towers, sipping their lattes and reading sort of papers, you know, produced by their mates so they can sort of, you know, peer review each other. But out in the real world, people are really struggling. And they're struggling because they're saying that, you know, they're following the advice and it's actually, you know, causing considerable problems because they're doing what they've been told and it's having the exact, almost the exact opposite effect of what it's supposed to. So in most forms of human endeavour, when you get it wrong, eventually you say, look, we just have to admit we got it wrong. We thought it was a good idea at the time. We meant well, but we really realise that we've got it wrong. And, you know, the P76, for example, as a car was a good example of that.
Yes.
They said, we're not going to make any more.
Yeah, what do they say? It seemed like a good idea at the time.
Yeah. But what we find, Chris, unfortunately, in big public health is that they're never wrong. And not only that, if you don't do it their way, they'll try and force it down your throat.
There's a lot of God disease in big public health, isn't there?
Sorry, there's...
A lot of God disease in big public health.
Yes. Has been known to occur, and not a lot of listening, and particularly not a lot of engaging with actual citizens of this country. I mean, as a GP, I see, you know, actual real people. I don't just look at papers. But if you're in public health, you generally don't deal with people on the receiving end. You go to meetings, you fly at the front of the plane, you chat with your mates, you review their papers, you tell yourself how clever you are. But you don't generally deal with the end user or consumer. But this notion of doubling down, so they want to actually make these food labels and this tick and a star system mandatory. No, don't make it mandatory when it's not working. Basically fix it, or really, and the best way to fix it is to abolish it. And you abolish it by saying if it's processed food, you shouldn't be eating a lot of it. You should be mainly eating real food. You know what? Real food doesn't have labels, so we don't need to give it any sort of system.
Sounds like a great idea to me. Now, let's go and tell big public health. Hey, Joe, thank you very much. Your time, as always, much appreciated.